This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Failure to launch is the Hollywood banner flying over the homefront drama in theaters right now. Young American men in their 20s and 30s still living at home with mom and dad. In the movie version, desperate parents hire Sarah Jessica Parker to blast lingering homeboy Matthew McConaughey out of his childhood bedroom and Superman sheets. In real life, the portion of not-so-very young men, aged 22 to 34, still living at home has doubled in the last couple decades. For a long time, this was not the American way. Now it's common. Some have gone out and come back. Others have never launched. This hour, we'll ask what's going on. Up next On Point, young American men at home with the folks. Joining me now from Washington is psychologist and family physician Leonard Sachs. His essay, What's Happening to Boys, appeared Friday on the Washington Post op-ed page. He's author of Why Gender Matters. His forthcoming book is Boys Adrift, What's Really Going On Behind the Epidemic of Unmotivated Boys. Leonard Sachs, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Also with us from Princeton, New Jersey, is Catherine Newman, professor of sociology at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton University. She has researched the growing trend of young adults returning to the parents' homes, both nationally and internationally. Catherine Newman, thank you for being here.
Glad to be here, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly, and one experienced gentleman himself. Jack, thanks for joining us.
A pleasure to be here, Tom.
Leonard Sachs, first to you. What's going on?
Well, as you said in your introduction, there are more young men staying at home, men in their 20s. I just spoke yesterday with Professor Robert Schoene at University of Michigan, professor of economics. He found that 30 years ago, only about 11% of 26-year-olds were living with their parents. That figure now is up to about 20%. And as you said, there are big gender differences in who those 20% are. Young men are substantially more likely to be living at home than young women are. But I think more important than just the numbers is what's really going on. And there, I think Professor Judy Kleinfeld has done some really important work. She's interviewed these young people, mostly in their 20s, who are living at home with their parents. And she'll ask a young woman, say, what are your plans? Mm-hmm. What's going on? Where do you see yourself 5 years from now? And most of those young women have a very coherent answer. They'll say, well, you know, right now I'm doing an internship at a nonprofit, doesn't pay anything, but it's going to open up a lot of doors for me. Or another woman might say, I'm taking classes at a community college, I'm going to earn my degree in about 2 years, and then I should be able to move on. And I think what's most important about Professor Kleinfeld's work, she comes back 4 years later and tracks down the same young woman. And you find, hey, she did it. She finished her internship. She got that job. This other woman got her degree, moved on. But when she speaks to the boys, or the young men, if you like, and she'll ask them, you know, okay, what are your plans 5 years from now? A lot of those boys, you get the impression they're kind of dealing with that question in an impromptu sort of way. They say, oh, you know, yeah, I'm going to get a good job. Many of the young men, unlike the young women, would try and answer with a joke. So they'd say, oh, my plan for the future, I'm going to marry a rich woman. You come back 4 or 5 years later, and you find that the young men, for the most part, have not accomplished what they had said 5 years ago or 4 years ago was their objective. They haven't moved out. They haven't gotten that degree. And she presented those findings at our conference 6 months ago. And the title for conference was Driven Girls and Directionless Boys.
Directionless
Boys. The girls
have
a plan. Boys without direction. The boys are kind of drifting. And what's most curious about her findings, which matches very well with my experience as a family physician living in the same community here in Montgomery County, Maryland for 16 years, is that these young men living at home, they really don't see a problem. You know, just like the Matthew McConaughey character in the movie Failure to Launch, they're perfectly fine with living in their parents' basement, working part-time, getting some spending money in their pocket, playing video games. They're not troubled. Their parents are ripping their hair out and troubled that their son is not motivated. But the son himself doesn't see a problem.
Catherine Newman, this is a real digression at the margins, but in a significant way from what we think of as the American norm, sort of grow up, grow out.
Well, it's true that we're seeing some changes take place, and whenever you have change that occurs across adjacent generations with different patterns of maturation, it's troubling to the generation that came before that looks at their followers and says, you know, there's something defective about this group. But in fact, these changes are very widespread across the world. It's not just in the United States. And so I think it would be a mistake for us to conclude there's something exceptionally pathological about young men in the United States. 50% of young men in the same age group in Italy are living at home. That is 30-year-olds. 50% of 30-year-old Italian men live at home and have never left home. The same thing is true in Japan. The same thing is true in Spain. So the
but
phenomenon
historically, wasn't America different? I mean, Italy is famous for men living at home and young men and have for many, many years. But
not to this age, though. Mm-hmm. What is happening across these southern European countries and in Japan as well is that the age of marriage is rising to levels that have never been seen before. In Japan, the average age of marriage now is 27 for women and 29 for men, and that is the highest in the developed world. The estimates are now that something like 25% of Japanese women will never marry, and that is absolutely unprecedented. So my point is not that this isn't a change. It is a change, but it's a change that's sweeping the developed world, and it has a lot to do with changes in the labor market, changes in the housing market that have been particularly hard on boys.
Well, let's look at those, Catherine Newman. I mean, you've got people coming out with a lot of college debt very often. The labor market, tough. The housing market, very expensive. So are these young men just stymied at getting into it? Why would they be more stymied than young women?
I think that some of the changes that have happened in the economy have been particularly hard on young men. You know, in the past, in my generation, there were manufacturing jobs that paid a good wage that permitted young men to launch themselves into independence with a modest amount of education. Those jobs are gone now. And so it now requires a great deal of education in order to achieve the standard of living with which they're raised. There also is a cultural change. When I was a kid, I would have done anything to be independent, including living in a total hovel, which is what I did. But 10 years later, my youngest brother was not willing to live in a hovel. He wanted a new car, and the only way he was going to be able to afford it was to stay home. So there are cultural changes in people's expectations by generation of what they consider to be an acceptable standard of living. But to achieve them, they now have to have a lot more education. The labor market is unkind to these aspirations for young people, and not just in the United States, but all over the developed world. Independent living in terms of housing costs are very high. And we have to remember young women have always left home earlier than young men because they marry younger. And so there's always been an age gap. But everybody's getting older. Young men and young women are getting older in tandem, so to speak. The gap between them is quite pronounced, and it always has been.
Jack Beatty, what do you see in this failure to launch gang, young men in particular?
Well, you know, Dr. Sachs says he doesn't think they're troubled. I'm sure he has data for that, but I wonder about that. I mean, it's implicitly infantilizing to be around, you know, to be a grown person around your parents. I mean, pick this up, clean that. Why did you do that? These aren't questions that grown people ask one another. They are questions that parents can't stop asking their kids, no matter how old they are. And I just think that there's a real depressing aspect to this that must in a way reinforce it. That is, once the young man gets stuck, I just think that some of the depression must start in and just help to keep them in that cycle, and every day having to deal with these really ego insulting commonalities that parents and children deal with, but that is not really anything a young man of 20, 25, 30 should have to face from his parents.
We'll hear from young men, I am sure, in just a few minutes. But Leonard Sachs, how about it? Is it really so ego-bruising? Maybe it's good budgeting these days. Instead of throwing it into rent, stay home for a while, build a nest egg before you strike out on your own.
Well, what is really startling to people my age and Mr. Beatty's age is that these young men, the young men we're talking about in this failure to launch syndrome, truly are not troubled. Mr. Beatty would be. He's clearly one of those men who would not at all enjoy living in his parents' home at the age of 25 or 30. But
God.
These young men really are
heaven forbid,
not troubled.
He says. Yep.
And one of the really useful things about the movie Failure to Launch is that Matthew McConaughey plays this role very well. He is not at all bothered by living in his parents' home, even when his father barges in on him having sex with a young woman. Mm. And that's a movie. But, you know, I'm a practicing family physician. I have 7,000 patients, and I have dozens of these young men.
Failure to Launch, the movie, has been doing quite well at the box office. Thank you. They appear to be on to something here. Let's listen to a little more from that. Here's Matthew McConaughey as Tripp and Sarah Jessica Parker as Paula. She's been hired by Tripp's parents to motivate their aging boy. They go out for a lunch date on a boat in the movie Failure to Launch.
To actually take you out on the water on the first date would be very forward of you, Paula.
Well, so far, I must say I'm very impressed. Beautiful setting, simple meal. I assume this technique has worked in the past?
Yes, ma'am, it has. Is it working now?
You know what? Kind of is.
Uh-oh. Let's go for a walk.
But I'm not done with lunch.
Yeah, you are.
Seriously, I'm not one of those girls who don't eat. I wanted all that.
See, technically, this is not my boat. Actually, it's not my boat in any way.
What?
I'm a boat broker. I sell boats. I would love to own a boat like this, but it's not the right time in my life. Besides, the guy who does own this boat is right behind you.
Matthew McConaughey and Sarah Jessica Parker, it's not his boat on the water. It's not his home where he lives. What do you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. John's calling from Boston. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good. What do you know?
Well, I moved back home a couple of years ago. I graduated from Boston College 4 years ago. After living out for a year and shoveling money into the furnace, I listened to my parents' advice and moved back home so I could save money for school.
How old are you now, John?
I am 26.
Are you in the bedroom that you slept in as a boy?
Absolutely. I had to redo it a little bit and touch it up. The sailboats on the wall had to go.
And how's it going among your peer group? Do your friends think it's weird or par for the course?
My girlfriend's been fairly patient, but she's a few years older than me anyway. Every once in a while, actually, when I go to a high school reunion and folks ask where I am, I do feel a little bit of a lump in my throat before I admit that I am still at home. But as I rationalize it, I don't think there was any other option. It's really just not feasible, and I think after somebody explained the benefits of compound interest, I realized just what a negative direction I was going in financially.
So are you working full-time, John?
Well, I'm working part-time. I'm going to school, and I juggle freelance work as well. So it's been a little bit of a struggle, to say the least.
So, but do you see yourself, I mean, you're trying to save some money. How do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as a slacker or a smart guy maneuvering toward the job market? What?
Oh, I see myself as a hard worker. I see the Boston rent situation as a phenomenally big ripoff, and I think that's part of the reason that we're losing I think we've been losing some of our labor force around these parts is just because it's just so phenomenally expensive. The day to day cost of just picking up a roll of toilet paper from the corner store can empty your wallet pretty fast.
So how long can you go on this way? Have your parents started clearing their throat around you as they pick up the house or not?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I disagree with Jack Beatty. I'm in a more fortunate situation. My parents are significantly easier to live with than the roommates that I had. They'll be moving fairly soon. So, they'll be moving fairly soon. So, they're taking their nest with them to Rhode Island. So at that point, I'll have to move up. In the meantime, I've saved up a fairly substantial amount of money.
And right there, feeling comfy in the old home nest. John, thanks for calling. Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee. We've got Ryan on the line. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
We're good. What's your story, Ryan?
I'm similar to the last caller. I'm 24, working on a master's degree, taking out about $10,000 a year loans, trying to focus on that. And it's just a similar situation. I pay for my own health insurance, about $500 a quarter, and it's just really tough economically to be able to take on a $500 rent payment each month on top of all that and still hope that something doesn't fall through the cracks.
So you're at home. What do your parents think about it? What do young women think about it?
I'm not having any problems with the young women. My parents are definitely understanding, and I think I definitely try to, I do my laundry to don't take any money, anything like that on the side, I think is one of the professors or doctors there was saying. And I try to be as independent as possible, like two entities living, you know, under the same roof. And I think as a last caller, I would prefer my parents any day over any roommates that I've had in the past.
That's great. Ryan, we wish you good luck with that. Jack, here's a generation pushing back against your view. They're comfortable. They're happy to be with their parents. And what's the problem?
And real pragmatic. You know, I mean, that rent situation in big cities is killing. And, you know, look at the situation, I don't know, 40 years ago when I was in their shoes. I mean, in those days, the minimum wage was worth about almost 80% more than it is today. Lots of rent. There was a lot of rent control in cities. I certainly benefited from that. The world, and, you know, there was no such thing as globalization. You could go and work for a factory or get a good blue-collar job. In other words, the old sort of institutions of autonomy and independence, it's just a bigger, bigger stride than ever before. And partly it's because of my generation and what we have done with real estate values, bid them up to the sky.
Those days are gone. Catherine Newman, we can hear what Leonard Sachs is talking about here in just our first two callers. These are young men very, very comfortable with their choice to spend a few years at home before they head on out.
Well, I'm not sure I would use the word comfortable exactly. I would say they're very pragmatic and that, in fact, they are doing exactly what we expect them to do, which is to invest in themselves, in their skills, in their education, and not indebt themselves up to the sky. How could that be wrong? And what's wrong with parents or the family across the generations helping one another to launch at a level which would be impossible if these young men had to pay their rent as well as their fees for their master's degrees? I think that we have to be careful not to pathologize something, mm-hmm. which is a perfectly rational response and a responsible response between generations. Neither John nor Ryan fit the description that Mr. Sachs has given us of people who are lacking motivation or not pragmatic or kicking back and doing nothing and working for Kinko's. They are getting their education and trying to avoid sinking into debt in the process.
But something has changed here. I mean,
yeah,
in my generation, the idea of staying home with parents was just not going to happen. There was a kind of the generation gap was the big buzz phrase then. And there was no way that people would
voluntarily. Well, in your generation and in mine, it did not cost $43,000 a year to go to college.
That might bridge a generation gap, right? That in that number, huh?
there were jobs available for you, even if you decided not to go to college, that could allow you to be an adult. When I was 17, I left home. I worked in crappy jobs, but I paid very low rent, and I had student loans that carried me through undergraduate school. You know, today my children face an entirely different landscape, and I think it's actually virtuous that John and Ryan are trying to make pragmatic decisions which will pay off in the long run. But yes, there's an adjustment. I might also point out that when they say they prefer their parents as roommates
to the roommates they had,
that we should also recognize it's not just young people whose lives are changing. It's parents who are changing also. They are granting more autonomy to these young men at 25 than they did when they were 13. It's not the same kind of relationship. Also, parents themselves are working double overtime. And in the first 18 years of their children's lives, they haven't spent nearly as much time with their kids as my parents did with me. I'm not sure they're so sick of them at age 18 as they were in my generation. So the whole family spectrum is changing. And it's uncomfortable when these changes happen in generations that are side by side and new norms are being born. But eventually, I suspect this will equilibrate and we won't see as much tension.
Well, we're listening. We're listening here. Glenn's calling from Lincoln, Rhode Island. Hi, Glenn. What are you hearing?
Yes, I'm just on kind of the opposite perspective. I'm 31, and I gladly traded the debt for college, the freedom to get out of the house. And just can't imagine, you know, being at home still with my parents. Even if I did get some economic advantage out of it, it just seemed like the worst place to be for a young man.
So when you hear the stories of the guys who have called in, said they're there and they're all right with it, what do you think?
I think they're just delusional, yeah.
Delusional because what? Because they don't have the kind of freedom that you've had.
Yeah. I mean, the autonomy is great. I can't imagine having, you know, making love and having my parents barge in on it. That would just be I'm just like, I mean, I'd gladly take debt to have the freedom to do that any day.
Get out of those Superman sheets. We hear it, Glenn. Leonard Sachs, what do you hear? On the one hand, we've got callers who are saying this is just good sense. Catherine Newman says, look, the world is changing. Glenn says, my gosh, I can't picture.
I agree with Professor Newman that the three callers we've heard from are completely unlike anything that I see in my practice and certainly unlike what we're talking about today. I think it illustrates that your listenership is very well educated. The boys that I'm talking about do not listen to National Public Radio. And at this time of day, they are playing video games or they don't listen to NPR, unfortunately.
Now, when you say boys, what do you mean, boys?
Men between the ages of 20 and 34.
So not boys by any traditional definition.
Well, that's right. And indeed, I've gotten hundreds of emails the last 3 days from young women who refer to these 29 and 33-year-olds as boys, sometimes in quotation marks, sometimes not, because in many respects, their behaviors, their activities, their hobbies, their pastimes are those of 15-year-olds. They're playing video games. And again, they're not listening to the radio. I think you're going to have a hard time finding the boys we're talking about on this show, but they are out there and they are very numerous. The Department of Education recently released data showing that more than half of young men who begin college in this country will never graduate. They will never earn a degree. Your first two men, John and Ryan, have both earned a degree right there. They are not part of the syndrome we're talking about.
Catherine Newman says, let's not pathologize this. You're the psychologist here. Do you see it as a pathology?
Well, that's a good question. And I've received a lot of emails from young men who say, young man specifically referred to traditional Buddhism and said, look, one of the aims of Buddhism is not to strive after anything. Not to seek, not to want, that the lack of ambition is a virtue. Now, in our North American Judeo-Christian culture, that's not the case. We see the young man who is striving as an epitome of virtue. But he said there's another way of looking at this. Maybe the young man who's sleeping till noon and having a very relaxed time, why is that not virtuous? And I think he's making a reasonable point. What I said in my response to that young man is, well, you are living in your parents' home, and I wonder if they share your point of view. That is, it's not a problem as long as you and your parents are all comfortable with you living the life of a video game-playing Buddhist monk.
You quote Ayn Rand in the op-ed piece you did for The Post from Atlas Shrugged, the central character asking there, what would happen if someone turned off the motor that drives the world? Are you saying that somehow young men are checking out of their fundamental kind of engine of society role?
Some young men are. There's a great deal of diversity here, and when you talk to individual people or you hear from individual callers, there are still many, many young men out there who are driven, who are accomplished, who are on their way, and who are highly motivated. And the phenomenon we're talking about is not true of all young men or even the majority of young men. But what is troubling is that it is true of a growing number of young men. 20 years ago, when I graduated from medical school, it would have been unusual to find a 30-year-old man living at home, working part-time, without any particular motivation. Now it's common. That's a fact. It is not the majority, but it's a rapidly growing number of young men. Mm-hmm. What's going on? This is what Professor Kleinfeld is trying to focus on, and she's recruited about 40 people around the country, from Diane Ravitch to William Pollack to Sandra Skotsky, Mark Barline, formerly Director of Research at the National Endowment for the Arts, and the 40 of us are trying to address this question, what's going on with boys? And if your listeners want to find out more about what she's doing, her website is boysproject.net. And she would welcome correspondence, inquiries from anyone who has an interest in this topic.
Lots of people interested. We saw Washington Post had a huge number of online postings after your essay ran right across the gamut. Parents saying, oh, you know, thank goodness it's good to learn we're not alone. Young women saying, yeah, come on, guys, get up off your duffs. And then young men saying, what's the problem here? My parents are happy to have me. Michael's calling from Wilmington, North Carolina. Michael, you're on the air. Hello, Michael. Are you there? Let's take a call from Westwood, Massachusetts. Rosalie is calling. Rosalie, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm interested in this conversation so much because I have a young man at home, my 29-year-old son, and the point that I wanted to bring up that has been touched upon is the critical difference in ourselves as parents of this generation and our increased mindfulness of the individual child that we have that's growing to adulthood.
So your son's 29, so you're kind of thinking of yourself as a boomer parent and how you're different from maybe your own.
I'm definitely different than my own parents who would have encouraged a child coming home. I'm always happy to have my child come home. When he came home after college, that was one child. The child that's come home in the past year is a more mature adult child who makes his own space, and it's not a dependency at all. He's here. He knows why he's here. He also knows the benefits of being in the midst of family and the activity that it represents, that's positive.
He's 29. But is there an age at which, Rosalie, you get nervous? Are you now?
I'm not nervous at all now because he has a clear plan. He was in a relationship and they were living together and that relationship moved on and he decided it was a time to reassess his finances and where he wanted to go. And he has a clear plan and neither one of us or none of us expect that he's staying with us forever. He's clear that he has certain goals that he wants to reach, you know, some of the things that have been touched upon such as student loans being eliminated. But he knows that he's free to be here. You know, I certainly am not going to put him to my schedule. We have different schedules. And he isn't playing the role of child, which is very, very important.
Who does the laundry, Rosalie?
Actually, we all do it.
Does he pick up after himself?
Absolutely, which was a delight to me because the child who came home after college didn't pick up after himself. So I find this quite pleasant. And what you have is an adult in the house who will get it. If it's a dinner time experience where all are involved, somebody's going to be setting the table, somebody's going to be chopping onions. It's very different than feeling like, would you please do something?
Brian's calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom, everybody.
Hi.
I'm calling. I'm 25. I live at home. I go to grad school at night. I work full time. I make, you know, decent money in the mid-60s.
You got it all going on, Brian.
Yeah, but when you start looking at all the uncertainty with home prices and everything else, someone might have saved up enough to put a down payment on a house, and then the cost of family and what retirement might cost by the time we're around and what benefits are going to be around as far as Social Security or anything like that.
Right.
And then when you look at the debt that our own parents have and how little they've saved, it's pretty frightening to look at, you know, buying a house and starting a family. Take on those liabilities with the liabilities that parents might be facing in the next 10 to 15 years.
Right. So what's your game plan, Brian? You're 25 now. How long do you expect to be at home?
Maybe the next year or two, just to save up a comfortable amount and pay off. I mean, when you start your adult life with $35,000 in student loans, it's, you know, that's just one more liability that's there.
And your parents are comfortable with it? No problem?
Yeah, they like having me around. Cooking stuff, so...
You're working full-time, you're going to grad school, you're saving. It's hard to put a knock on your motivation, Brian, but we appreciate your story. Thanks for calling.
Sure. Thank you, Tom.
Let me get another call here from Davenport, Iowa. John's on the line. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I think your premise is wrong.
Which premise? What do you mean?
Well, when I look back, I've studied history, and in the 1800s and early into the 1900s, it was typical for there to be a large nuclear family
mm-hmm.
of grandparents, parents, children, all living in the same house. I think in Vermont and the New England states and so on, you still have very large houses that were set up for the family to live together. The children didn't move out.
So there's precedent in history. We get that. But wasn't the post-war expectation, I mean, you sound like you were there, John. You remember when the expectations was pretty much that young guys got out.
Well, yes, the expectation was the American dream. A cottage, a wife, two children, and half a dog. But that, you know, the thing is that things don't change that work.
And so maybe we're just reverting to a kind of norm here. John, thanks for your call. Catherine Newman, how about it? It seemed that we had some decades where this was not the norm. Do we have history reasserting itself here?
I think it's hard for us to recognize that the period after World War II was actually an aberrant period of extremely high growth and a booming development of a middle class that just hadn't been there before. So many of the patterns that the living now see as normal, as durable, are actually unusual. They were an unusual byproduct of a period in which we invested national resources in higher education in a very democratic way through the GI Bill. We provided massive infusions of money into the housing market for young families. Wages were rising for men so fast that they could afford to have stay-at-home wives. Those were all conditions which lasted until about the mid-1970s, and then we really did enter a new world. And that new world has been difficult for young men, especially the young men who were in the past aimed at the blue-collar job market. Mm-hmm. That has almost disappeared in the United States. So I do think we are coming back to a phase that in some ways is more normative for our country, but not an easy one for us to adjust to, because that long wave of high growth coincided with the birth of the baby boom generation, which is so huge that virtually any of its experiences feel like the norm.
And I know
feel like the way that we do things.
The American. I know I've got to let you go in just a minute here, but what about Leonard Sachs's concern? Not maybe about some of our callers who are juggling jobs in graduate school and saving money, but about that kind of video game playing, lost in a daze, 20-something, who's still at home.
Well, I think he has a very fair point. I do think we need to do more research to decide what proportion of the numbers we're looking at are accounted for by the kinds of people he's talked about. But I think any time you see a major social change that is hugely disadvantaging to boys, you're going to see some who can't manage, who do feel very anxious or depressed or do retreat behind video games and infantilization, because social change of this magnitude is very hard, and it takes a resourceful person like John or Ryan or Brian to manage it. So you're going to see a certain proportion of people who will be troubled by this, and we do need to pay attention to them. I just don't think they are the normative experience.
Catherine Newman, it's been great having you. Thank you very much
for
being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Catherine Newman, professor of sociology at the Woodrow Wilson School at Princeton University. Koki is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Koki. You're on the air.
Hi. I just have a quick comment.
Yes.
I think we're not pointing the fingers at the wrong people. Instead of pointing the fingers at the men, I think that we need to be pointing the fingers at the parents, because I believe they're very accommodating. I'm 26 years old, and I moved out of the house when I was 19 years old, going to college, and haven't been back in the home since. Yet, I have people in my family, my parents and aunts and uncles, who accommodate my cousins by, paying for their car, allowing them to play the video games. And I just think that the parents are very accommodating. They're giving the kids what they didn't have.
Koki, let me ask you then. You're a young woman, right, in this age bracket. Do you think that families are being too accommodating? Are they unmanning their sons somehow?
Absolutely, absolutely. It was always said to me, go get a good job, go to college. But to my brother, it was always said, okay, it's okay that, that you go out and have your fun or spoil your role, as it will be. But, they're very accommodating to these young men, because they're actually living their dreams out through them, giving them what they couldn't possibly have when they were younger.
And why more accommodating to young men than to young women? What's the difference? What's your interpretation?
I have a daughter as well. I don't want my daughter out and about partying and doing those things. You don't want her to, become pregnant at all or any of those things that happen. So, you let your son do whatever they want to do.
Koki, thanks so much for your call. Leonard Sachs, what do you say to that? Different expectations of young men and women, and why would that be?
I heard an awful lot of that in the online chat with the Post and in the 300-some emails I've received since. A lot of the young women are angry. They observe that the boys are allowed to do things and get away with things, whereas the young women are expected to do more chores and be more accountable. I certainly agree with Catherine Newman that the proportion of young men living at home today is similar to what it was, say, in 1940. But there's an important difference she didn't mention. In 1940, a 30-year-old man living at home with his father was probably engaged in the same line of work as his father was. Mm-hmm. They might be farming together. They might be a father and son plumber or carpenter. That's not true today. That 30-year-old man living at home today is not working with his father. He may not be working at all. And I had a chat last week with a friend of mine who owns a remodeling company. He told me it's been 10 years since he hired a young American man as a plumber, an electrician, or a carpenter. He says there's none in the pipeline. He says he's going to do this work for 10 more years with the crew that he has, all of whom are over 50 years of age, and then they're all going to retire. He doesn't see any young men coming up in the trades, any young men who has what he calls a sense of craftsmanship. We've lost that. We've had 30 years of ignoring gender differences, ignoring gender. It's something I talk about at length in my book, Why Gender Matters, and why that's harmful. And one result is we don't have young men who care about craftsmanship, who want to be good carpenters or electricians. Those men are aging, and we are literally importing our carpenters and electricians from other countries.
The old way of men, or in some minds, manliness. Barbara's calling from Hingham, Massachusetts. Hi, Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm just calling because I just tuned in and I missed the very beginning, but I think I'm looking at this in a total different way. I think the economics of the generation that's raising these children today are the driving factor, not the economics of what's occurring today, because I think there's always been, it's always difficult to break into independence and housing, but I just see young kids. I have a nephew and his peers that graduated college 2 years ago. Some of them went, some didn't, I mean high school. Some went to college, some didn't, but a lot of them chose to stay home or drop out of college and play video games. And the fact that economically their parents can allow for that and do that, and that's what they did till, you know, basically through high school, they had no motivation. They know they're going to be taken care of. Their parents don't want them. They're scared to actually teach them to be independent because they didn't do it in those early stages. And now they're afraid they'll go out and get drugs and, you know, and be lost. And
so I think it looks like trouble to you.
Yeah, I think what happened was they never got the basics of, they never had the drive early on that we did when our parents did not have the economics to say, I can provide a life for you past high school. It's, you know, you had to start contributing in the high school years, and that doesn't exist anymore. And it, particularly for some reason, boys, my niece, on the other hand, is on the fast track, and all of her friends, they're very driven to have a career because that was something that was denied her mother, and she saw her mother working. So I think the role models have changed. While the boys sit home and their parents are working two jobs and don't have time to help those boys, you know, start to, you know, set goals and be driven for a future and think in terms of a future. So they sit at home in the afternoons doing video games, smoking pot and getting demotivated, basically.
Demotivated is the prefix there, and we hear it, Barbara. Thank you very much for your call. Jack, I wonder about this piece of it. Barbara looks at the economics of how these young men may look at life. I mean, it was always assumed, at least I assumed, that when you got kicked out of the nest, or in our generation, you left it voluntarily, that you would scrape by, maybe for a long time, before you built back to a kind of comfortable life. But that was okay. That was par for the course. Maybe young men don't want to scrape by. Maybe there's an expectation that they have to have an unbroken kind of comfortable middle-class lifestyle.
Well, that's very interesting. And maybe they sense they're not going to, and they want to keep it going for as long as they can. You know, Eric Erickson years ago used the word moratorium, that's what happens pretty much developmentally for teenagers in America. They go enter a moratorium before they have to go to the adult world. Well, now, of course, that moratorium is extending. And I think many young men and women alike can face the fact that the middle-class life their parents had is going to be very difficult for them to achieve. That the old pattern of America, I do better than my father, we move up, that is not going to work this time, at least in economic terms. And that's a big thing for people to have to take on board.
But isn't that all the more reason to go out and get at it, get on it? It's not going to be easy, so, you know, let's get to it.
Well, yeah, but I can imagine, too, just how crippling the gap, the sense of the gap must be. I'm here, and a house costs $500,000. I mean, it's like, how? You know, if I'm here and the house costs, $26,000, and I'm, that's thinkable. And so those things have happened. You know, the part of it's just in the conditions. And the conditions are not, are not really propitious for independence at an early age. You know, that's why some people think we need to reverse the Social Security business and give people Social Security, essentially a grant, early in life, which they would pay back later on in order to get them going.
Go out and get going. Sean's calling from Revere, Massachusetts. Hi, Sean. You're on the air.
Yeah. How you doing?
We're good. What do you know, Sean?
Well, I'm 34 years old, and when I was around 20, my father left my mom.
Yeah.
So I've been home ever since. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, so my father took off. Me and my mother became kind of like roommates, and I had to help her out, and it's just too expensive to go out and rent for me to buy a house.
But you're 34 now. That's a long time. Is this working for you?
Yeah, it's been working. Dating sometimes can be tough, though.
Dating? Why?
Yeah. Because I think when girls find that I'm 34 years old, they think, well, he's a little mama's boy and he still lives at home, which I don't think is the case, you know?
What's your plan, Sean? You're 34. I mean, are you ever going to be out of there, or is it you and mom going the distance?
So far, it seems like me and mom going the distance, but if she ever meets someone and she wants to remarry, then I got to start thinking of another plan. right now, I don't have any plans. I'm at home, I'm comfortable, and I consider myself the man of the house.
Have you seen Failure to Launch yet?
Yes, I actually went on a date.
There's a picture. There's reality on reality. Sean, thanks very much for your call. Leonard Sachs, our time is getting really short here. I want to just touch on something you raised. You have sort of following this theory, and I don't know where the data stands on it yet, that there may actually be some biological reason behind what you see as a diminished motivation.
That's right, because the unanswered question here, Mr. Beatty, for example, said, well, look at the housing prices, et cetera, but why is this affecting the boys so much more than the girls? Young women don't get a discount on their rent or a discount on their down payment, and yet the young women seem to be dealing with this better than many of the young men are. And I just want to say to your listeners before we leave, if you have a son or a nephew and he's having trouble getting in gear, getting his life going, please get in touch with us. Our website, whygendermatters.com. You can email me. Professor Kleinfeld and I want to interview these young men. We want to try and get a handle. There is a thought that some of these men have been on medications like Adderall and Ritalin that may damage that area of the brain, the nucleus accumbens, which is responsible for motivation. We're trying to get a handle how many of these young men were on those medications. Is that part of what's going on? There's a lot of unanswered questions here. So please, if you're concerned about a son or a nephew, please go to whygendermatters.com, send me an email. We'll talk.
Leonard Sachs, psychologist and family physician, joining us from Washington, author of Why Gender Matters and his book, upcoming, Boys Adrift, What's Really Behind the Growing Epidemic of Unmotivated Boys. Dr. Sachs, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks again.
Jack Beatty, last thoughts here. Wow, the world changes. Maybe the hurdles get higher to jump, but I remember a time when it didn't matter. You would jump no matter what was out there, or so we thought. But then Catherine Newman says, well, sure, but you were jumping into the sort of sweetest, economic pond America had ever known a generation
back. That's right. What does Robert Frost say? Home is where they have to take you in. And it sounds like for a lot of these young men, things are working out pretty well.
Well, to all at home or on the high seas, we wish the best of luck. Jack, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.